Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Smiley Kaufman for 61. Wow.
I'm Smiley Kaufman, and this is The Smiley Show.
What's up, y'all? I have a conversation with a champion to share with you. He's rocketing up the Ryder Cup rankings. He just won in Detroit, and most importantly, he's my partner, Ricky Fowler. We talked about everything from the spring break crew rescuing him from the golf boys to what was going through his mind when his birdie putt dropped on the first playoff hole at the Rocket Mortgage. So let's get to it. Here's Rick.
All right, got my good buddy Ricky Fowler joining us, coming off a win at the Rocket Mortgage. Man, it was an incredible week, but we'll get into that here in a little bit, Rick. But I'm just happy that JT, Jordan, and I were able to save you from the golf boys. It says a lot about yourself is that you're so versatile that you can fit in two groups. But I kind of want to know a little bit more about the golf boys. Like, how in the heck did that like come about?
So it was very random.
you don't say.
I can't remember exactly the year, but one of the first years that I was in the match play that used to be played in Tucson. Mm-hmm. And it was, so obviously Ben Crane, Bubba, myself, and I don't think Hunter was there with us, but this whole thing came about. Ben Crane was doing the kind of workout spoof videos with Snake Shaker and and all that stuff, which, I mean, if anyone needs a good laugh, and whether you know golf or not, those Ben Crane workout videos back in the day were
it was the best thing on the internet, man. It was unreal. Like how he would swim out in the pond to see the green surfaces in the morning. That was a good one.
It was a little bit of, I would say, like a spinoff of that. So in a way, between Ben and Bubba, I got thrown in there as like the token young kid. And then somehow we drug Hunter Mahan into it. So the concept started there. And then I can't remember the exact date where it all worked out to where we could all go in to basically meet up at Ben's house at Vaquero and spend, I think we spent 2 days.
2 days shooting all that?
Well, we, you know, being recording artists, you know, we had to go in the studio and, you know, record our vocals. And then the next day was basically shooting the video. Just, yeah.
You probably haven't sung karaoke since. That's probably your one and only.
For the most part, yeah, because I know what I'm good at and what I'm not, and singing and dancing are at the bottom of the list.
I've seen you sing and dance. It's once you get there, it's epic.
I have to be around the right people.
Yeah, that's a good point. I've seen it, especially on spring break. Seen that a time or two. And I mean, what's your overall thoughts of just that whole trip in general and kind of what it's morphed into? Like I was on Twitter yesterday and you guys are grouped into SB2. It's always going to be something that people remember. And at the time it was your Snapchat that was, I mean, I don't know how many followers you probably had on Snapchat at that time, but you were definitely tagging me. And I probably went from, I don't think anybody knew who I was even after I'd won on PGA Tour at that point, until you started tagging me in your Snapchats and stuff. And it's like, oh my God, I left that week and was like, nobody knew who I was. And it's like, all right, we went from D list celebrity to like, we're like B minus now or C plus, which is sick.
Yeah, I think, I mean, we all went into that trip. We were obviously just going to have a good time and go play some golf, drink, stay safe, but have a darn good time.
But it morphed into more than that, you know?
Yeah, it kind of, I threw it out there. I was like, hey, do you guys care if we put out a, you know, little video here or there? And
that turned into a lot more videos.
Well, it was more just because the response and people loved it and thought it was amazing. And so we kind of just rolled with it from there. Nothing was planned. And I think that's the best stuff is we went there not going to, you know, have a crew following us or like no content or anything like that. It was just like, hey, here's a glimpse into what we're doing, whether you're watching or not, or if there's a camera around, like this is the four of us just on a guy's getaway trip. And yeah, like I said, I think that response of that first day when we put out a couple of videos, people just wanted more. So yeah, we went with it.
It was kind of like the day and age, like now everybody's trying to capture content. All you hear the word, the content word, it's kind of a cringe word, but yeah, I guess we were doing it without even realizing we were content creators at the time. Yeah,
it was organic. I mean, like we said, we didn't schedule it out or plan it out or like, you know, stage stuff. It was just, you know, other than maybe, you know, someone laying down on the tee while someone was hitting, but yeah, we were just goofing off, having a good time. It was all one takes. It wasn't like we, oh, let's redo that so we can get a better shot. It was just, we're going to roll through and what happens, happens.
One of my favorite memories from that trip was you and I were in the range cart and you were driving us around and JT and Jordan were just ripping three irons at us. Yep. And then, you know, I used to always hit three irons at the cart guy that was picking up the balls, you know, that's just part of growing up as a kid is hitting the range picker upper until you have pros that can reach, you know, 140 ball speed with a three iron stinger. Then you have a different perspective of driving that thing around and getting smoked.
Yeah. It gets loud in there.
It was a good time, man. Well, you know, before that you and I had played together on the PGA Tour. We played together at Kapalua in Phoenix. And I remember getting the text message. So this is right before we went on spring break a couple months later. I get the text that I'm being paired with you in Phoenix. And that was my welcome to the PGA Tour moment where it's like, oh shit, this is going to be, I think when people think of Phoenix, they think of the atmosphere, and they also like will associate some players to it as well, like yourself, who has embraced the atmosphere. And I also need to say to you, I'm a little upset that my first experience in there, I didn't know you were a crowd pumper upper, but you get in there and you're like, kind of, you're about to get into it, and then you pump the crowd up, and I'm like, oh shit, because I've got to hit right after this, and I haven't hit in the arena, and this place is going nuts. It's like Death Valley and Tiger Stadium at LSU, and now I got to hit a golf shot. But you've always kind of talked about that arena and just like how you've embraced it a little differently than everybody else.
Yeah, it's just a fun place. I mean, growing up in the action sports world and riding and racing, you know, going and watching buddies, you know, race on the weekends and at Supercross, which is in a stadium, obviously a lot bigger than the stadium of the 16th hole, but kind of has a similar vibe. And, you know, the crowds hang in, it's kind of, it's hectic in there.
Oh yeah.
And for me, I always found that at least getting them to make noise, yell, whatever it may be, at least the noise was constant. Mm-hmm. And you can kind of adjust to whatever that noise level is versus when they try and get them quiet, there's still people yelling, having loud conversation, drinks being made. So it's, yeah, it almost becomes like a loud white noise when everyone's, you know, yelling and cheering. Step back, kind of take a second or a few seconds, take a deep breath, realize like, okay, here's our new normal, you know, quiet, or at least this noise is constant versus, you know, like I said, you could have someone that happens to try and yell when you're going to hit or whatever it may be.
Yeah. The best advice you gave me in there was, if you're in between clubs, hit the shorter one and hit it harder.
don't try and hit a little soft shot in there.
It's just not the right idea. You don't want to get booed, and you definitely don't want to hit it in any of the bunkers around that hole, because you just need to get on the green. And then if you make a birdie, great. If not, just go to the next one.
I feel like they've gotten even tougher over the years, where even if you hit it on the, you know, hit it to the middle of the green to like one of the back pins, and you know, you're
30, which is a hard shot back there.
It is. It's especially if you get it where it's into or in off the left. They'll boo you.
Guys were hitting 7 irons this year to that back pin. It was back into the breeze.
Yeah, windy.
Ooh, yeah, that's a difficult shot, Rick. You know, you've always had such great fan support, and it's crazy when I played with you, it was just insane. When you turned pro, did you envision what your brand was going to look like, or did it kind of happen organically?
No, it all just happened. So I chose to sign with Puma. We thought it was a great fit. Not many people were wearing it. Being able to wear some colors and louder stuff, I was fully for it. A lot of the stuff was my idea as far as like wearing head to toe orange or, you know, other colors, whatever it may be. And a lot of that comes from, you know, growing up riding in the motor or the action sports background. A lot of riding gear is bright and colorful, and it's just a fun way to, I guess, show off kind of some of your, who you are and personality and stuff. So that was kind of one of the reasons that I liked doing that. It wasn't planned out like, hey, we're going to do this, it's going to make people like us or anything like that. It was just, I'm going to do this because I like it. You never know if you're going to have fans or not. And yeah, I mean, like I said, nothing was ever planned out.
It just
came with it.
You know, it's so recognizable, your brand, across not just golf, but across all sports. Everybody kind of recognizes your all orange look. And I'm curious, when was the first time you saw a grown man wearing all orange at one of your tournaments watching you?
I don't remember the exact first time, but
that had to be just Sunday. Like, what in the world?
Yeah, every Sunday there's at least one. And it's cool to see, because it's like, you gotta in a way throw the thought or worry of like people thinking like, what are you wearing? Like, you look, you know, I don't know, you look dumb or whatever it may be. It's more about just owning it, being yourself. Like, I don't care, you know, what other people think. Like, I'm gonna wear this. And that was kind of my side of it, was like, yeah, I know this is different. I want to do it. I don't want to necessarily be like everyone else. I want to just have fun, play golf. It was just a way of being different. So when I see people do it, whether it's a grown man, kids, I think it's great, because it's just like, hey, I'm gonna be different. I'm gonna be me, and I'm gonna rock it.
There's a picture I took this year in Jacksonville with the players, where this happens a lot. It's almost like, you know, when you go to Disney World and a big group all wears the same T-shirt, so everybody cannot get lost and they can keep up with everybody. It was a group of guys of probably about 15 to 20 of them. They were all wearing the same shirt and then the same orange Puma hat. And I took a picture of them all in 18, and there's probably 20 or 30 of them. I'm like, what in the world, man? If that was like my hat or look, and that's their, it's like the Ricky identifier, but it was for them to not get lost as well. So you're also helping the people out there. You don't even realize that.
There's plenty of functions to wearing orange or other colors, you know, hey, whatever works.
Man, so there is, like, I experienced downsides to social media and partnering with companies and having to post stuff on social media when you're struggling. And it's so difficult. I struggled with it. And the fact that, you know, you have these great partnerships and, you know, you can put out great stuff and it's good for them. It's good for you. And you've got so many great partners and you've been involved in so many commercials. And during the time when you were struggling, was that something that like ever bothered you too much? Or were you able to kind of look past just the idea of like, hey, you need to go practice when it's 9:30 at night? It's like people don't realize your commitment to that side of the business for you. And you've done an unbelievable job with it. But I'm curious how you were able to handle that during that time period.
Yeah, I'd say it's always been tough, but more so when you're not playing well or struggling. And you just have to realize, like, people, unless they've been in a similar position or, you know, done what we've done, they really just don't get it and don't understand. It is tough. But when you have, you know, great partnerships and, you know, companies that want to, you know, basically collaborate and work together, and whether it's commercials or, you know, endorsing a product, I've always tried to keep those organic as well. Have the same vision, whether it's the charities that they're involved in, what they're trying to do to make a difference, or, you know, if it's a product, something that I actually use, I don't want something to be fake. But yeah, you always have the haters on social media. I think there's so many good things that come along with social media and the access for people to see stuff and you know, content that we're able to put out. But you're always going to have the other side of it. So there's always a give and take. But like I said, I think the big thing is, yeah, people really just don't get it. And you can try and explain it and stuff, but the partnerships and stuff, that's, you know, it comes with the territory. You know, you play well, there's going to be more opportunities out there. You struggle, the opportunities start to go away. But at the same time, you know, you're still with, you know, companies or whatever it may be. And, you know, there's either obligation to put stuff out, or you still want to push a product because you believe in it. And then you get people, like you said, that, hey, you're playing terrible, you should go practice, you should go do more of this.
I'm gonna go give that guy a swirly, man, whoever that is.
It'd be like the same of like me just continuing to post pictures of hanging with Maya and I'm playing bad. It's like, hey, you need to spend less time with your family. You need to go practice. You're playing bad.
It doesn't make any sense how people can type stuff like that and not have any wherewithal of like what the real world is actually like and what being a professional golfer is actually like. And nobody has handled it all as gracefully as you. And as we kind of get into the rest of this year, you know, 8 top tens, man, like just an incredible year, and definitely with that win at Rockin' Mortgage. But
back to the WM Phoenix Open real quick.
You hit one on 7 this year on that par 3 out of 10. You made a hole in one there. Was that a 10 out of 10 as far as, was it a 6-iron that you hit to like a front right pin?
Yeah.
It was majestic.
It was, I can't remember the exact number, but the ball goes a little further out there. It had to have been around 215 or something hole was my guess. But I just teed it up a little bit, was going to hit it straight up in the air. I hit a really good shot the day before to the back left pin. I hit it. The tee was up a little bit, hit 7-iron, very similar shot, and just tried to do the same thing with a 6. But I would have to say 10 out of 10 because I hit it out of the center. I hit it straight up in the air, never left the stick, and then went in. So I don't know what else you could ask
for. I mean, that's pretty dang good. That's kind of right when I was, especially just watching your golf swing, because how it's kind of evolved. That swing in general, I remember taking a video of it and then kind of played it in slow-mo. I was like, geez, that looked really damn good. And I don't know if that's kind of around the time where you started gaining some confidence, and it had started back in the fall, but still, man, you were really swinging it well on that West Coast. And then obviously it kept going from there.
Yeah. Thank you. I mean, the biggest step was when I got a little time to talk with Butch and start working on some stuff before Napa. And I went out to Napa feeling I wouldn't say uncomfortable, but I didn't feel comfortable with where the swing was and how it felt because it was pretty foreign and new. Mm-hmm. And I just went there and continued to trust and exaggerate as much as I could while actually playing. It's one thing to what you can do and exaggerate on the range, but when you're actually out on the course, it's a little harder to exaggerate. So that week, seeing the shots I was able to produce, how tight the lines were.
Yeah, it's a narrow place.
That gate, yeah, it's not very wide. There's a few holes that are, you have plenty of room, but there's you got to keep it in play there. So I think that was obviously the first big step, was seeing kind of some results and feedback to mentally help myself kind of build some confidence, momentum, and then, you know, went from there. Didn't play great in Vegas, but ended up, you know, in the final group and finishing second in Japan. That was the start, and that gave me something to go into our little off season to work on, continue to grind. And that's what put me in the position to, you know, go to the West Coast and then move from there.
Has it been the same stuff the whole time that y'all have worked on?
Yeah, for the most part. You know, some different feels here or there, but ultimately cleaning up the takeaway to that kind of first parallel and then getting.
Which way was it getting?
Well, my tendency is the club gets outside the hands. Mm-hmm. So from there, it's hard to keep the club out in front of you and ultimately have it in a good position at the top. A lot of times for me, it would be outside and then tip over as far as getting laid off.
Yeah.
So
it just felt behind, like you just always felt a little stuck from there, or you're just playing catch up.
Yeah, it was, I would say that area is what felt in a way comfortable because that's where I was always at. So getting into a steeper left arm plane and the club being closer to, you know, down the line at the top, you know, that felt very up and across the line.
Interesting.
I had to feel like when I got to that first parallel that if I was holding a steering wheel, my normal would be this way. I had to feel that way.
Wow, that's tough to take to Napa. It's a narrow golf course, man.
I felt like this at the top, and
I can't. What did you feel like on the 12th tee at Napa with that feel?
Let's see, which one's 12?
It's a little short par four, but like literally out of bounds is right there on the right.
Yeah, those ones with any hazards or OB close by, it was just like, okay, you're gonna trust this. You're aiming here, hitting this shot. It's going to feel like I'm trying to take it back and we're going like way out right, but we're just going to trust this and just swing and let it go.
That's hard to do. I tell you what, I got pretty good at identifying where the white soldiers were on the golf course. Those little white OB sticks, I got pretty good at always seeing those. Like, oh God, yeah, there they are.
You usually weren't aiming there and working it away from it. You usually aim away from the white soldiers and it usually doesn't come back.
No, those are the see you laters. I'll say too, when I saw you at JT's wedding, you know, after you just mentioned, you know, playing well at Napa, playing well at Zozo, you know, you're right there as well to come down the stretch. I wasn't up to watch it. I don't think hardly anybody was, but it was so sick for you to finish T2. But in my conversations with you at JT's wedding, and I talked about this on Monday on the pod, I just felt like I knew you were going to have a big year, but I sensed from you that you knew you were going to have a big year as well. Can you just talk about how talent never leaves you and confidence can be that close to coming back, even though it can feel so far away, like this golf game can sometimes make you feel?
Yeah, I mean, those were between Napa and Zozo. Those were the two big weeks that, like I said, got me ready for the main part of the season and starting in the calendar year. Zozo really came down to 15 and 16. I missed a couple short putts, one for par, one for birdie. Hit what I thought were pretty good putts, and they just did something a little bit different. And Keegan made a couple big putts coming in, and he won and I finished second. So a lot of times it comes down to, you know, one putt, especially when there's a few guys in the mix. And those just gave me confidence to reassure me that the stuff that, you know, I was working on was the right stuff. I was seeing a lot of shots that I was able to hit that I wasn't able to in the last few years. And to be able to take that and have some time through the winter to work on stuff, to play, and get ready for that West Coast. It was the first time where I was able to really kind of build momentum, build some confidence, and feel really good that things were, you know, moving forward, and we're going to continue to do that.
I was with you for a good amount of that time at the US Open, and I was on your round Friday and Sunday, but Thursday, you know, you get it going. It was great scoring conditions. You shoot a US Open record 62, and I'm back there behind the green with Allison, and all you have to do is two putt to get that record. And I looked over at Allison. I was like, he just needs to two putt and he shoots the lowest round in US Open history. And she was like, what? I don't know if she told you that, but man, like, talk to me about that Thursday round.
It was just one of those days where everything was kind of working fairly well. Just kind of made sure I got off to a decent start. Sometimes going in the first round of a major, you're not sure how the bounces are going to go. And, you know, if you're going to hit your lines and numbers, and made a lot of good swings early, made the turn and was in a good spot and just kept going.
Heck yeah, you did. You made a ton of birdies Friday too.
Yeah.
All week.
Over the week. I mean, really, Sunday was the day we didn't really, I mean, we didn't make much because didn't hit irons very close and didn't make any putts. But other than that, I mean, the first 3 days were some solid golf. But that first day, yeah, I didn't see many leaderboards because they didn't have a bunch on the front nine, and I finished on the front. And I remember getting up to, you know, nine green, our last hole, and seeing that Xander was at seven, I was at eight, and it was just cool to see that, you know, it's fine, because I talked to him afterwards and he saw that he would make a birdie and he was still second, make another birdie, still second. He's like, shoot, someone's out there. And then he finally saw it was me. So it's fun when you can, you know, push each other along. So yeah, I'm obviously stoked to two potted, posted 62. I couldn't remember as far as US Open went. I knew Johnny Miller had the 63, but like, I think Gracie shot 62 at one point. And I couldn't remember exactly what the number was. So I was just trying to get in the house as low as I could.
Yeah. You did that. And got to watch you on Friday, got to pretty much be on your group that entire day. And it was really, really fun for me to call your shots that day in the US Open setting, considering the year before you were an alternate, didn't get in. And this year of run you've been on, it's been incredible. But I want to go to Sunday, and, you know, you're in that final group. Where were your emotions like that kind of going into that day? Did you feel good, or was it just kind of tough? To get it, from my perspective, it was looked like it was tough to get it going, and then you finally caught a little wind around, like, closer to the end of the back front nine. Excuse me.
Yeah, I felt really good all week. I actually felt like more anxious or antsy going into Sunday's round in Detroit at Rocket.
Wow.
I felt very good about the golf course in LA. I felt really comfortable around there. I'd been hitting, you know, irons really well. I drove it, you know, plenty good enough throughout the whole week to give myself those chances to take advantage of the irons and made plenty of putts, and got to Sunday. And, you know, Butch mentioned afterwards, you know, timing and stuff just got a little off and a little out of rhythm, but irons just weren't as tight and really didn't make many putts. So it was just harder to take advantage of some opportunities. I remember, like, second hole, drove it down the middle, had seven iron, and was trying to
win a tough pin back there.
Yeah, it's tough hole, tough pin, but I was trying to hit kind of like a straight seven iron in the middle of the green. Wind was off the left, and kind of just let it drift a little bit. And I tugged it a little bit. Didn't think it would actually get through, ends up going through the back, and
that's
have a
no man's land there too.
Impossible up and down. So, you know, situations like that where, you know, the days prior I was hitting my spots, hitting my numbers a lot better, you know, making par there, going to the next, I hit one close, missed, and just didn't really get that momentum going early in the round. So just was kind of fighting it most of the day. Like you said, I did have some good ones here and there.
I feel like that iron shot you hit on 11, man, was if that covers that bunker and it gets inside of 5 feet and you make birdie, I feel like you're right into the golf tournament. Cause it was you were in between clubs. It was the wind was going back and forth. You and Ricky Romano sat on that tee for 10 minutes and I'm sitting there watching and I knew it was a 4-iron you hit. Was that what the club you hit?
Yeah, it was 4. So I hit it great. And it literally, if it drifted another yard, maybe 2, it covers there. And I was trying to finish it left of that bunker and it just stayed right on it. Yeah, it's just it's a fine line.
And that's crazy too, because, you know, 8, it's when Wyndham kind of was whiffing it over there and the weeds left of the green. You hit it on the green until you 2-putt, make birdie. 9, you had a really good look for birdie and Wyndham looked like he was making bogey again at 9. And then you get to 11 and you hit that iron shot. I'm thinking, wow, that gets inside of a foot. You hit a great bunker shot, but for whatever reason, I saw a lot of people missing short putts on that 11th green. I don't know for what reason, but you weren't the only person to miss a putt there from inside of 6-7 feet. Like I saw, but
it looked and felt very straight. Like it had a little left tendency, but it felt like if you started it on the right edge, that it wouldn't move. And I felt like I had to start it inside the hole and I hit a good putt. And there was just more slope in the middle and end section of it. So like hit a good putt.
That was kind of, that to me felt like the tournament when Wyndham hit that incredible flop shot and then he hits driver on the next hole in the middle of the fairway to have like 80 yards. And he didn't hit it very close on that wedge shot, but still that little stretch of the golf course was like, man, that's the fine line in winning major championships is literally a yard or two one way or another, kind of like you're talking about what it takes to win. And the next week you say you Ed Rock and Mortgage. I'm curious. So why the ants in the before that round? Was it the rain that kind of felt that way?
No, I mean, so we had Travelers the week after and I was a ways back at Keegan. You know, it was more like, you know,
I don't know if anybody's beating him that week.
So I played really well Saturday, shot 60 to get, you know, back in the tournament a little bit. Knew it was going to take a low one and played well, just didn't get anything going again. So coming off those 2 weeks, I knew I was in a really good spot. Obviously now being in the lead at Rocket, I still felt good all week. You know, other than Friday, it was felt a little off, but was still managed to hit some good iron shots and post a good score. But yeah, for some reason, Sunday just a little antsy, a little anxious. Just needed to get myself settled down.
At least it was a morning tea time. You had to wait around all day. You just get up and go.
It was, and that was all more that just kind of started on the range and just was feeling it a little bit in a good way too. That's why you want to be in those situations. So yeah, so big thing, just talk to Brett, guy that I've done some stuff on the mental side with. I was able to touch base with him when I was hitting some putts before going to the tee.
Oh, nice. Hey, anything he told you that was just like, that kind of calmed you down or no?
It was, I have to look back. I don't remember as much now. I mean, I was playing stuff through my head throughout the round. But I think a big part for me was just trusting, hey, we've been playing really good golf. There's been a lot of good finishes. Just have to, you know, stay kind of in my rhythm, not get quick. And that was coming from, you know, US Open and talking with Butch. But I think a lot of it was just, hey, we've been playing really well. Just let it go. Trust it. Don't try and put the hands on the steering wheel.
Yeah.
Go play golf.
Well, you did that on 18, man. Like to hit that drive you did, that's not the easiest, probably the most difficult drive on the golf course is that drive on 18. And you're able to challenge that left side, giving yourself a great angle. and you never looked like you were pushing too hard, even though you needed a birdie. It to me, you looked relaxed and calm by the end of the day.
Yeah, it was a kind of a bummer going back to some of the kind of weeks prior. Like, I had those opportunities on the back nine to give myself cushion. I hit two great shots, well, the drive and then 5-wood on the 14, missed a 4-footer or so, felt like I hit a good putt. That's just Poe. Adam makes one in front of me on the next and I miss. Collins playing well up in front of us and just kind of lost a little bit of that momentum and don't make birdie on 17. Yeah, now my back's against the wall. I had played 18 well all week. Obviously, I hit that a little left of where I wanted to.
We'll take it.
Yeah.
It was probably nice because the balls were really spinning on that green a ton. So the first cut was probably great.
I was in the first cut. I definitely wasn't mad about it. It was more, we had a little bit of help. I just had to make sure that guessed right or judged the jumper properly. So we had...
Oh, it jumped. So how far were you?
Yeah, we had 147 hole. I was trying to hit a wedge like 135.
Oh, nice. So you just kind of hit with a little 3-quarter one and just brought the flight down a little bit?
No, it was still up there. It was actually in the air a lot. It looked a little
even
nice.
Better.
I wasn't sure. I was kind of just sitting there like... waiting for it to come down and just hoping it doesn't
just don't land in the hospitality tent.
Yeah. obviously it came out perfect, but I mean, you talk about the good angle from there. I mean, way over right's not a bad angle as well, as you saw in the playoff.
Well, was that a jumper over there too? You ought to judge
a little bit. I got dropped from some casual water, and then where I was dropped was still, as you know.
Did that help getting to be able to drop?
Yes and no. I mean, obviously, I wasn't going to play it from standing water. It was like literally standing water. But as you know, when you've taken relief from casual water, the area around it is still wet.
Right.
So when I dropped my ball, I could hear it just, and then it had like water on it and stuff, but it was trampled down. So big thing to me, I was just, had a good number. It was 190 hole.
You were 190?
Yeah, I had 7-iron.
Jeez, I was thinking you had like a 9-iron from over there. What a shot.
So I was, and since you've obviously played and been in around some wet or watery conditions, I was just thinking, don't hit it fat.
So you hit it pure and immediately when it takes off, are you thinking into yourself, this is perfect?
I knew it had a really good chance because it came out low, kind of driving and knuckly.
And you knew it wasn't long.
No, I didn't think it would fly too far because of how low the flight was. It was just depending on kind of where it hit and how it reacted. Both were perfect.
And Adam Hadwin's iron shot, when it landed, everyone's like, oh, wow, this is tight. And then ends up back behind you about 10 feet. And then I saw a quote from Morikawa that said his iron shot, he thought he made it. On the fly, like that's how good it looked in the air. So two shots from those guys where they kind of misjudged out of the fairway. And then you got you over there in the rough who hits this little beauty from 190 with a 7-iron, has the best look. And then you make the putt. And what were you thinking over the putt? Like, did you know you were going to make this, or was there like, what was the final thought right before you sent it away?
Well, I had a pretty good idea online and stuff. Adam's putt rolled. He was going a little right up my marker, and he hit it. If he hits it a foot softer, he makes it. Hit it a little firm. It went by maybe 2.5 feet or so. And so I got a pretty good look on what the ball was doing. I always like seeing kind of the last few feet and kind of where I visualize it entering the hole. So felt like I had a pretty good idea. Got in there, and it was just like, hit a good putt. I'm not leaving this short. We're hitting a solid putt. See what happens. But at the end of the day, just hit a good putt.
Yeah. And then when it was rolling up to the hole, like, did you know it was in 2 or 3 feet out, or you're like, just please somehow don't do something stupid the last like foot?
Yeah. So a little bit of all that. I didn't really see it until the last couple of feet, because it was only 12 feet or so. So hit the putt. And by the time I look up, it's already halfway. Adam's putt didn't move as much right as you would think or what visual looks like up there, because there's a lot of slope. But with where we were coming from under the hole, you're kind of going more back up the hill. And so looking at it, like I said, I only see it for a split second there at the end. And I was like, it looks good, but it's Poe. You know, you can catch the
anything can happen.
It can bump. His putt held. It should be good. And then went in the right center. And that was just kind of the huge relief.
Yeah, well, you did. I mean, the iconic picture of you just kind of staring up at the sky. What was the first thought you that entered your mind?
I think it was just a, like I said, relief. Yeah, there was a no planned celebration or anything like that. It was just like, thank you, it's finally over.
Yeah, man, that's, I was, I don't know if you saw my tweet, but there was a, I don't know, it's this guy and he's, it's got a, his caption says like, I don't know why I'm crying in the club right now. And that was me. I was just like, so emotional. I was dying laughing. I'll have to send you the picture, but man, what'd you have to drink on that night after that celebration? I've kind of heard, but I think everybody else would be kind of interested.
So Simon, a good friend of ours who also comes out and does some chefing for us and cooks for us every once in a while on the road. They didn't have anything really going on Sunday. And he asked his kids and wife if they wanted to drive up to Detroit and watch me play. So they hopped in the car, drove 8 hours through the night, slept a couple hours, and then they were there for the whole final round.
Wow.
Just so happened that he brought a bottle of Pappy 10 with him. And so after a one, he went and got it from the car, and a handful of us had a little pour of some 10-year Pappy.
Let's go.
There was about a third of the bottle left, because like I said, we all just had one, but there was a handful of us, so the bottle goes fairly quickly. But and then Derek, my trainer, myself, we, you know, had maybe two each on the plane to finish off the bottle. So that was Simon mentioned Derek before we left. He said, you boys go ahead and put Pappy to bed tonight.
I'm sure you slept good. Actually, I don't know. Did you sleep at all that night?
It was pretty hectic, but yeah, once we got home, till now, I haven't really had much to drink or been able to really celebrate much. I mean,
right.
JT and Bill were over yesterday. I had a couple long drinks on the 4th, mm-hmm. Little side project beer, but no, I haven't gone crazy. So like the couple bourbons on Sunday was a great way to kind of just a little toast to it.
Right.
But traveling with a little human changes things.
Absolutely. And you put a ton of golf like in the last month too, man. Like you haven't had any break.
Yeah. So, I mean, we got home, obviously had to get all her stuff together, bath and get her down. And by that time, you know, then unpack the car, get everything in the house, get that kind of sorted, shut down and go to bed. So there, what really wasn't, you know, it was more about our normal routine and just getting settled first. But like you said, yeah, we've been playing a lot, we'll miss the cut at the PGA, but that's still a week on the road. Went from there to Colonial to Memorial, came home for 5 days. Then we went to the US Open, Travelers, Detroit. I guess basically home for 3 days right now, and then leaving tonight for London. So that'll be London's going to be the little bit of celebration with us being around and hanging out, Wimbledon and then Scottish and British. So that's a 10-week stretch, and of those 10 weeks, we'll have played 8 of them and we'll have been home 8 days.
Man, that's a lot of travel. And that's actually good advice I got from a player on tour. It's when you're playing good, just keep playing. And when you're playing bad, take some time off and work on it. So you're obviously riding it, but you know, where we started as friends, you know, you were single, and then Allison, you met her and eventually get married to her. And now you have Maya, same with, you know, Francie's always been around since you've known me, and we're both girl dads now. And I'm kind of curious, what is your favorite thing to do with Maya?
Oh, there's so much. It's I'm looking forward to it for you because it just keeps getting better and better. You know, whether it's, you know, she's liking playing in the pool right now, like throwing her around and doing different stuff. Every once in a while, she likes to hit a few balls. So like she'll come stand between my legs and, you know, I help hold her club and, you know, hit the ball a few yards. Yeah.
All of it. Well, she, is there anything, who likes avocados more, you or Maya?
Maya. I mean, I love guacamole. I don't necessarily put avocado on a bunch of stuff, but, two of her favorites, avocado and sweet potato.
Yeah. Anna Carter just, we just fed her for the first time, real food, sweet potatoes last week and avocados this week. And she's all in, but the diapers have started to kind of change a little bit. That's part of it. But man, I'll leave you with this. You know, I think this was at Palmetto Bluff on our spring break trip. We went out to dinner one night. You ended up picking up the tab somehow. I don't know how you did it, but
sneaky.
What you said to us after though was, I kind of sobered up in that moment. You were like, you know, you can't really beat times like this, spending with quality friends, you know, just those moments that you'll never forget.
Yeah. I would say those moments or those times, it's just super rare with everything that we all do and being able to actually all be on vacation at the same time, all the kids, dogs, they're just rare. So
it's you fun, have to like,
take advantage and cherish those times. So, I mean, we're going to do it more and there's going to be plenty down the road, but it's not like they happen, you know, it's not even every year. This last one, you know, like you said at Palmetto Bluff, that's been a couple of years in the making.
Mm-hmm. Well, we had a dang good time and I'm a huge Ricky fan, a huge Allison fan and Maya fan. And we always are looking and hoping for the best for you guys. And I will see you at the Scottish Open and the Open Championship where I'm hoping to call some more of your great golf, man. Safe travels over to London and thanks for coming on.
Thanks, man. You got it. We'll
boom tower.
We'll be sure to share maybe a couple pints over the pond.
Yeah, boom tower.
Boom tower.
See you, buddy.
See ya.
So great catching up with a good buddy of mine, and can't wait to have some pints across the pond with Rick and the rest of the Spring Break boys. We'll be back here on Monday with a John Deere recap and look ahead at the Scottish Open. Thanks for listening, and see you then. The Smiley Show is part of the SiriusXM Sports Podcast Network. If you enjoyed this episode and want to hear more, please give a 5-star rating and leave a review. Subscribe today wherever you stream your podcast.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.